Surprised that a lot more people pray than you'd imagine, actually. Lots of people pray every night before they go to bed. And so over the next 2 weeks, we're going to be giving these to everyone who comes to church. And the idea is that you use it yourself for 7 days. So it's just a very simple little thing each day. Just take a few minutes to go through it and pray the prayers. And then after you've used it, think of a neighbor or a friend or someone else that you could bless by giving this book away. So we bought 300 for the church, and you're allowed to take as many as you think you can give away. So it's not one each, you can have as many as you want for other people on your street or people that you work with. We're giving one to everyone on the site here in Jacob's Well and all the surrounding businesses. That'll be about 100 people probably. So, and all the midweek groups, the mums and toddlers and so on. But if you'd like to take a handful away and then after you've used it, lose it, that would be fantastic. Good. Well, I forgot to say, and I'll forget afterwards if I don't say it now, that it's we've a meeting tonight. So it's our 7 o'clock worship and prayer meeting. That's an opportunity for those who just want to hang out in God's presence, really. You know, we worship a bit longer. We don't have the confines that we do in the morning. You know, we have shorter time in the morning. In the evening, we just worship and pray and seek the Lord. And so I really encourage you, if you've not been to those evening meetings, they're often really special times in God's presence. So that's tonight at 7 o'clock. Okay, could we have the PowerPoint on, John? So we're I've been doing a series on the times I've been speaking, which is meant to help us as Christians know what we believe and why we believe the things that we do. And over the weeks we've looked at themes like do all religions lead to God? Why does God allow suffering? In the next couple of weeks, we're going to look at, is the Bible reliable as a historical document? Is it full of errors and contradictions? But today, we're looking at the person of Jesus and his place in history. So it was said of Jesus that he was born in an obscure village. He was the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another obscure village where he worked in a carpenter's shop until he was 30 when public opinion turned against him. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never went to college. He never visited a big city. He never travelled more than 200 miles from the place he was born. He did none of the things usually associated with greatness. He had no credentials but himself. He was only 33 when he died. His friends ran away. One of them turned him over to his enemies. He went through the mockery of a trial, was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While dying, his executioners gambled for his clothing, the only property he had on earth. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. 19 centuries have come and gone, and today Jesus is the central figure of the human race and the leader of mankind's progress. All the armies that have ever marched, all the navies that have ever sailed, all the parliaments that have ever sat, all the kings that have ever reigned, put together, have not affected the life of mankind on earth as powerfully as has that one solitary life. Now that's an amazing thing, isn't it, when you look at the life of Jesus in perspective, that he's actually had more influence and changed the world more than any other person. So what do we actually know about Jesus from history? Some people think, well, Jesus, he's like one of these mythological people, you know, lost in the myths of time, and we don't know who the real historical Jesus was. Maybe he never actually existed, a bit like Santa Claus or the Big Bad Wolf, you know, all these myths grow up. But no scholar or serious historian would believe that, because there's so many historical books that record the life and the sayings and the teachings of Jesus. Of course, as Christians, we're familiar with the New Testament. In the New Testament, that's where the stories about Jesus, the things that he did and said, a lot of them are written. The New Testament isn't one book, but it was written by 9 different people. Okay, so if just one person wrote the thing, you could say, well, maybe he fixed it. Maybe he imagined bits and added extra bits in. But 9 different people wrote the accounts of the New Testament, telling different stories and different things that Jesus said and did. So of those 9 people, 3 were Jesus' closest friends, 3 of the disciples. And they lived with him. They walked and traveled and ate with him for 3 years. So they're in a position to really know what he said. You might say, well, because they're his friends that were trying to make up this religion, surely we can't trust their words. But when you think that all of them were killed for their faith, you know, would you die for a story that you had made up that had no truth to? So 3 were his disciples. There was Jesus' half-brother, James. He wrote a book. Peter's nephew. Peter was the chief apostle. Mark, he was one of the early disciples. And then there was a Greek doctor who was also a historian, who was writing a history book. He went and interviewed a lot of eyewitnesses to try and get the, you know, the definitive eyewitness account from many different sources. That's Luke's gospel. And then there was Paul, who started his life as the greatest enemy of the Christians. He hated them and he was persecuting and killing them. But then he was miraculously converted. And so, that, you know, these are men who are writing for different reasons, from different backgrounds. That's the 9 writers, 2 other earlier followers of the Christian faith. But that's not the only thing that we know about Jesus. There were many other early church leaders, bishops and church fathers. But in addition to them, there were many non-Christian historians who also wrote about the life of Jesus. So one of the most well-known Roman historians at the time was a man called Tacitus. And if any of you have studied the ancient world, you'll have heard about Tacitus. He wrote his book, The Annals of the Roman History. You know, he was a Roman historian, basically. And he was writing at this point where he mentions Jesus about the fire of Rome. Nero, who was this crazy emperor, wanted to extend his palace. And conveniently for him, a fire broke out at the end of his palace and burnt down a large part of the city. And people thought that he started the fire. And so Tacitus, the historian, he said about Nero, to suppress the rumor, he falsely charged with the guilt and punished with the most exquisite tortures the persons commonly named Christians, who were hated for their enormities. Christus, the founder of that name, was put to death as a criminal by Pontius Pilate, the procurator of Judea in the reign of Tiberius. But the pernicious superstition, repressed for a time, broke out again, not only through Judea, where the mischief originated, but through the city of Rome also. So that's one Roman historian, and there are several others. This is a Jewish historian. Now, the Jews rejected Jesus' claim to be the Messiah. So this man, Josephus, again, is a very well-known Jewish historian. He wasn't a Christian, but he understood a bit more about the teachings and things like that. And this is what he wrote about Jesus. Now, there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works or miracles, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He was the Christ. And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men among us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again on the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold, these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him. And the tribe of Christians, so named from him, are not extinct to this day. So those are historians that weren't believers, but they were just writing about what went on at their time. And so historical facts, things that we know without any shadow of a doubt, things that can't be disputed about Jesus, was that he lived in the first century, that he was so influential, thousands of people followed him, so many that it started to threaten the political and the religious order of his day. We know that he performed miracles. We'll look at that in a minute. We know that he was executed by being crucified. And then that his followers claim that he came back to life again, and that he met with people and talked to people and was, as it were, still alive today. So who was this remarkable man of history, Jesus Christ? Well, Jesus, again without doubt, is the most admired role model in history. And throughout history, people from all different countries have looked to Jesus, read his words, read about his life, and put him on the top of their most admired list. There are so many quotes of famous people, what they said about Jesus, that I won't list them. Just one, Tennyson, the famous poet from Queen Victoria's reign, she said, "Jesus' character was more wonderful than the greatest miracle." And it's who Jesus was that inspired people greatly, wasn't it? Many of the greatest people in the world have been his followers. People like Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, Francis of Assisi, King Alfred the Great, who made the law book, the first law book for the English nation, Sir Isaac Newton, the great scientist, Florence Nightingale, and countless thousands of others took Jesus as their role model. Jesus' life sums up what many of us would like to be in our best moments. Without doubt, Jesus was the most famous man of his generation. He was the most sought after, the most followed. And yet, you know, often famous people, they become arrogant, don't they, and remote. And Jesus wasn't like that at all. He was ordinary. He lived as a peasant's teacher. He went into people's homes and ate with them. He played with their children. He was down to earth. I think the two things that people remember Jesus for the most, one was his compassion, that he loved everybody, especially the outcasts, those who were on the margins of society, the lepers who nobody else would touch, the sick, the widows, the orphans. The other thing about Jesus that people look up to is his moral values. There was a goodness about Jesus, an integrity, an honesty, that those people that lived with him for 3 years, they couldn't find one thing that they could say was sin in his life. Now that's amazing, isn't it? If you ask my wife or my children, "Am I perfect?" What do you think they would say? No. Even people in the church that don't know me that well, they all know that I'm not perfect. And nobody is, are they? You know, if you live with someone day and night for 3 years, and you still think that they're perfect, sinless at the end of it. You know, Jesus, even his enemies couldn't find any accusation of wrongdoing or sin that they could level against him. They hated his teaching, but there was nothing about his life that they could point to and say that he had done wrong. So he's the world's most admired role model. He's the world's most influential teacher. You know, his teachings have been followed and read by more than anyone else in history. Today, 2.2 billion people would say that they're Christians. That's one in three of the world's population. His words have been read by more than any other words in history. The Bible has been the world's bestseller for more than 15 centuries. There's no other book that is even close to it. Words like the Lord's Prayer, the Sermon on the Mount, sayings like turn the other cheek or love your enemies, go the extra mile. You know, those are not the words of an idiot. Otherwise, they wouldn't be the most read words in the world. His words have touched the deepest needs of men and women of every generation, and they're as relevant today, 2,000 years later, as when they were first spoken. And yet Jesus was more, much more than just a great teacher. He was the greatest miracle worker ever. And it's interesting when you think about the other religions in the world, that the founders of the other great religions, none of them ever claimed to have worked even one miracle. Not one of them. Muhammad, no. Buddha, no. The Hindu, none of them. And yet, Jesus was known as a man with a supernatural life, even by the Roman and the secular historians. This is what a Jewish historian wrote about him. On the eve of Passover, they hanged Jesus because he practiced sorcery. He led Israel into apostasy. So he was an enemy of Jesus. He wasn't a friend, but even his enemies couldn't deny that he had supernatural power. Scholars and historians that look at the life of Jesus, they estimate that he healed probably around 1/3 of a million people. There's nothing like that in history. There's no other man that has done remotely anything like that. Huge crowds would come, sometimes up to 20,000 people, in a day before healthcare and hospitals. And it's recorded that all those who were sick in the crowd would be healed. The blind, those who couldn't hear, children, paralyzed people who were carried into the meeting, unable to walk, would walk out afterwards. There were even 5 or 6 people who had died, 1 for 3 or 4 days, that Jesus brought back to life again. Extraordinary, miraculous life. Something else that's unique about Jesus is that his life was prophesied before he lived, down to the minutest detail. So as you probably know, the Bible was written in 2 parts, the New Testament, that's the bit talking about Jesus, and the Old Testament. Now the Old Testament, the latest book in the Old Testament was written 450 years before Jesus was born. So within the Old Testament, that also was written by a lot of different people, but there were 61 major prophecies that explain what the Messiah is going to do and what he's going to be like. So, archaeologists have dug up books of the Old Testament that are older than before Jesus came, so he couldn't have fixed it afterwards. And these prophecies predict things that he himself could have no possibility of influencing. For example, where he was born. Now, you might be clever, but there's no way that you can, as a baby, influence where you are going to be born. You can imagine Jesus, the baby, and there's Mary and Joseph on the donkey on the way to Bethlehem. Hurry up, I've got to be born in Bethlehem. He had no influence about that. And many of the other things, for example, it's predicted that as a child, he would be forced to flee as a refugee to Egypt. Now, that's a very specific thing that was predicted hundreds of years before. that he would be betrayed by a friend for 30 pieces of silver. And the money that the betrayer got, he would then take and buy a potter's field. These are very specific things, that all his bones would be pulled out of joint, but not one of them would be broken. His executioners would gamble for his clothing, that when he died, the sky would go dark in the middle of the day. Now, that is recorded in the Roman historians at the time, who weren't even writing about Jesus or the Bible. There was this mysterious, we would call it an eclipse of the sun, but that was recorded in the year 33 AD, on the day that Jesus died, and that he'd be buried in a rich man's tomb. So 61 different things. Now, the probability of any one person fulfilling all those same things, it makes it impossible. So imagine, that you take one person who's born in Bethlehem. How many of the people that were born in Bethlehem would flee to Egypt as a refugee? And then how many of those people would be betrayed by a friend for 30 pieces of silver? And how many of those people, so all the time the group narrows down and narrows down. And for somebody to fulfill just one in eight of those things, it's one in a thousand, what is it? 100,000 million. It's a lot of, that's just one in eight. And every one you add about six noughts to it. So the chance of anybody fulfilling one in 61 things that were predicted beforehand is remarkable. Now, the strangest thing about Jesus is the fact that he claimed to be God. And that's a bit awkward, isn't it? Because, we can accept great teaching. You might not live after it or whatever. But if somebody claims to be God, that is a little bit awkward. Because, normally great teachers don't claim to be God. Great people don't say things that they think their followers won't believe. And yet Jesus, this loving, this kind man, this great teacher, repeatedly said that he was God. Now, I just want you to imagine for a minute, in these days of Superman and Batman and superheroes, what do you think it would look like if there was a God? Okay. If there was a God and God decided to come into the earth, what would it look like? So this is what I think it would look like if God became a human being. He'd have an unusual entrance into the world. He'd live in a different way to other men. He'd have supernatural powers. He'd speak the greatest words ever spoken. He'd teach mankind a better way to live. He'd show people the meaning of life. He'd have power over death. He'd have a lasting and universal influence. All those things you could say about the life of Jesus. But when you think about what Jesus claimed for himself, it's either extremely arrogant or what is it? So he claimed that his teaching was greater than Moses, the greatest of the Jewish teachers, about whom he himself said his teaching comes from God. He said, my teaching is greater than Moses. He claimed that he was greater than John the Baptist, about whom he said, this is the greatest man that is ever born of woman. He said he was greater than the prophet Jonah. His teaching was wiser than Solomon. He claimed that he would sit on the throne in heaven, and on the last day, he would judge every person for what they had done. I mean, who says things like that? It's bizarre, isn't it, that this great man would say something like that, unless it was true. He said that nobody could come to God except through him. He claimed that he could forgive people their sins. And people would come when he was teaching, and they'd fall at his feet and worship him. And he wouldn't try and stop them. He wouldn't say, don't worship me, worship God. He'd just accept it and welcome their offering. He said on several occasions clearly that he was God. So we only have two choices about this. Jesus was God, true or false. There's no middle ground, is there? Either Jesus was God or he wasn't God. So is it true or false? Well, which side of the line are you on? If he was false, okay, then there's two possibilities. Either he knew his claims were false, so inside he knew that he wasn't God, but he was saying that he was. That means that he's a liar. And somehow that doesn't add up, does it? Because he taught people not to lie. And history would look at Jesus and say, he's probably the most honest man who has ever lived. But more than that, if he lied, would he die for what he knew was a lie? So it's doubtful that he was a liar. It doesn't add up that he was trying to deceive people. So the other possibility is that he really thought that he was God, but he actually wasn't. He was deceived. He was some sort of lunatic. Now, I've met people who think that they're Jesus Christ, but they're not the sort of people that would be the most influential people in the whole of history. They're more often those that are referred to mental health, you know, for help. So I think the thought that Jesus was a lunatic, that also doesn't ring true with almost anybody. Jesus wasn't a liar. He wasn't a lunatic. Well, what other options are there? And I think really it's clear that Jesus is who he claims to be. All his life adds up to that. The miracles, the teaching, the influence, the way he came into the world. In 2 weeks' time, I'm going to be talking about his unique death and the fact that he didn't stay dead, but he came back to life again. And there's a lot of evidence, historical evidence, about that we'll look at next time. So if it is true, then he's God. And if Jesus is God, you have two choices. You can either accept it and follow him, or you can reject it. And that is probably the most important choice that everyone has in their life. Because if it's true, and if you one day will have to stand before God on the day of judgment and give an account for your life, it's really important to know, isn't it? But more than that, if there is a God who loves you, who made you to be his precious son or daughter, who wants to help you to live a full and meaningful life, surely it's worth finding out about. And that's why today there are more people becoming Christians now in our scientific, technological age than at any other time in human history. Over 5,000 people a day around the world are converting to Christianity. And those people, if you talk to them, you can see many of their testimonies on YouTube. Muslims, Hindus, scientists, they all say the same thing, that I have met with Jesus. He's alive today. He's changed my life. He's real. He answers my prayers. He helps me. If you don't know Jesus in a personal way for yourself, I just want to really encourage you to get to know him. You could take that booklet, Try Praying, because prayer is really just having a conversation with somebody. And if God is real, why not ask him just to show himself to you? God, if you are there, please show yourself to me in a way that I can understand. And I can guarantee that if you pray that prayer over a period of time, God will gradually start to reveal himself to you. It's like the gentle dawning of the sun on a new day. It maybe won't be a blasting light for you. For some people it is. And I've heard hundreds of stories like that. For many people, it's more like the gentle dawning of the sun in a new day, that gradually they see things and they understand things, and then they start to feel things. They start to encounter God for themselves. And if you do that, that will be the best thing that you ever do. You'll never look back on it. Many of us here would testify that we know Jesus in a personal way ourselves, and that he really is a unique person, that we couldn't live without him because he's so amazing. So that's your choice, your decision. And I leave that with you. And just to finish, we're going to say a little prayer. So let's pray. Dear Jesus, thank you that you have arranged history in such a way that it's impossible for anyone to ignore you. All the evidence is there for those who choose to look. Please would you open my eyes and help me to see if you're really there or not. If you are real, if you do love me, if you did give your life for me, please would you come into my life? Would you help to change me? Help me to meet with you and experience you. In Jesus' name. Amen.